Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, buddy, welcome to This Life podcast. Bob's,
here we are.
Bob's in a very, festive singing type.
I just spent the weekend with Elvis, so I'm in a childlike state.
And to be fair, this was supposed to be your mental health day, and we dragged you in.
Yeah.
I appreciate you coming. Because this is part of my mental health, just sitting and spending time with you.
Yeah, this is fun.
And some of these
people. It's just getting here that's hard.
I'm sorry. Lisa Stroman. Dr. Lisa Stroman is a psychologist. She is the brains behind technologywellnesscenter.com. She's also an attorney. And Bob, you're going to like talking to her. She's a ton of experience on many fronts.
Well, that's so weird that you. So technology with psychology, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
But mostly,
remember
like
the thing
overuse.
I told you I saw at the rehab center the other day, and you were like, well, "This is a longer conversation."
Well, probably has something to do
it's
with
a doc-
this.
It's like it looks like a robot, but it's a doctor.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Does H&Ps.
Oh yeah.
Oh, look at both of you. Come on.
No.
Yeah. The robots are ways of people.
No, a doctor's on the TV.
No. It's
you might get some really open answers on it, on if it's robotic and not a person.
Oh, no.
They get to be by themselves with it. That's what I've been saying, because usually like a tech or somebody's there with them. I said, no, put it in a room and let them really tell the truth.
Bob, Lisa's thing is with overuse, addiction to technology, yeah. I mean, and what's doing to kids and stuff. You know what I'm saying? So you're
oh, I see it.
Tell me.
Elvis and what is it? Singing Monsters. It's like heroin.
Absolutely.
She asked a question. Why don't you ask it to Bob? Bring this thing up closer to you.
So my question, what I was talking about was whether or not you have issue or like a chemical or some sort of reaction that occurs when you have a little brain that's given exposure to something that can be potentially addictive, and does it prime them later to be a more addictive as they become adults?
She asked, that's a different question,
okay.
I'll address that in a second.
Yeah.
She asked, she's noticed that kids with the genetic potential for addiction, when they get off into the technology, are really bad later on. How does that happen?
Are there any children that don't get into technology?
There are a few.
That would be such a small minority of the population at this point.
In terms of regulating and balance and keeping some limits on, I mean, that's what I do now, is I go and tell parents, the more that they have it when they're younger, you're going to see problems later on. So we've got a lot of kids that are getting potentially identified as Asperger or some sort of spectrum issue because of their addiction with the technology at 2, 3, 4.
Because they socialize,
cannot connect in kindergarten.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
But why would you think that addicts might have an extra special time with this?
Because it sends you into nowhere,
but
a zone.
What is special about addicts that they would use that? So what if they use that?
They just will use it to excess. But the thing I find interesting is addicts, doesn't matter whether you limit them.
No, I understand.
You know what I mean?
You're looking at the behavior.
It doesn't teach them delayed gratification. It just makes them can't fucking wait till they can do it again, which it defeats the purpose of trying to integrate other things into their lives, because my son is that. He's 5, and he loves this thing called Singing Monsters, which I find relatively harmless, but it is that. You know, that soma look in his eyes when he's looking at the screen, right? So we tried it. We went on a hike this morning, climbing up in the hills. Even doing that, all he wants to do is get back to that.
Correct.
Right.
You know, this right here, it's so interesting. Remember my answer?
Yes.
This spot.
That's addiction. That is addiction.
But this spot is why I have to work with Bob behind me kicking me, or Sasha or somebody punching me, because the addict will put the using ahead of everything.
Right.
Which is just, they just want to get high. And I'll always go, well, why do they want to get high? Why are they so disconnected? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, if they get disconnected, they're not properly attuned. They're not in the frame with their parents. They're not attached. That they have another system at their disposal that's very effective, which is their addict system, and off it goes. And then they just leave the frame of attunement. Does that make sense?
And while you're in a really good frame with him, it just happened this morning. We're climbing a tree, we're up in the hills, we're all there. He's still, every 5 or 7 minutes, referring back to the game.
Oof.
Right?
Right.
So that's an addict. That's how an addict thinks of things. But I can get really existential about this shit. There is nothing to do in America, so I guess it fits the American culture.
Duh.
We are eating ourselves to death. We are inactive. There is no real middle class anymore. I see it with all the addicts at My Sober Living. All they do is sit and watch YouTube like zombies. So it fits the American culture.
So how do you feel about the addiction centers that are specifically now doing and charging $30,000, $40,000 a month for just internet addiction?
Well, I heard about it 20 years ago. They were doing it
for just internet addiction.
I know. Yeah. They were doing it for EverQuest, the original game that people were playing internationally.
It's like World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Addiction to me is you can't function in society. Society has become so easy to function in as a zombie that the bar is much lower. So these things that were really disturbing 20, 25, 30 years ago, where kids were isolated and alone and socially awkward, that's the way the culture is now.
It's all Facebook and YouTube.
That's all it is. I mean, I'm not talking about 10 or 20 or 30%. I'm talking about the masses are just spending how many hours a day glued to a screen, either their phone, a computer.
We all heard average
11 hours a day.
Oh. 11 hours
11
a day.
11 hours a day if you're junior high, high school level.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How's that for the millennials? How are the 20-somethings doing? They spend their whole day at work
on
the computer.
I'm feeling really good about my kids right now.
Then they go home.
They just escaped.
Yeah.
Then they go home and go on their social media.
Wait, Susan's in.
I'm on 24 hours a day.
Well, Susan Pinsky is on every waking minute.
Internet addict. Yes.
And she, I'll tell you the thing, she can't shift her focus, which is frustrating for family members. Because when she's focused on that, we literally be going, Susan, Susan, mom, 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 mom. And she can't shift. It's like, I'm busy. Why would you interrupt me?
You can't disconnect. Yeah.
I wish I had that brain.
We need to get closer to the earth. That's why my move to Claremont.
Werner Herzog making this exact same argument this week.
We just got chickens.
Really?
I got baby chicks for my kids, and they take care of
them. It's hard to get
day.
Me away from the NBA TV, though. I got to admit that.
Such a fucking addict.
But I'm really more concerned about America as a culture. It really, go to a Starbucks and look at what goes on. There are 19 people sitting in a thing, no one's talking.
I just walked down the street in New York City and there was a 20-something-year-old trying to say hi to the crowd. And of course, I'm so excited to be in New York and I'm unplugging because that's what my thing is, and I of course say hi to him, and then I realize when I walk past him, is it mental illness or is he doing like a social experiment? I'm not really sure, and everybody's like, you shouldn't really talk to strangers in New York. But
where did you go? Where'd you stay? What were you doing there?
I went there, met with the Dr. Oz folks, and met with Soledad O'Brien's folks who were doing some stuff. So some good stuff.
You doing the website, the stuff with
Dr. Oz? Yes.
But you should do the show.
Okay. Yes, we'll see.
Yeah.
Because
he likes it. I did a whole dark web thing with him. He liked that.
Yeah.
He likes that stuff. His producers like that stuff.
So if we take, but listen, technology has got to be top of the list of addictions in America.
Well. Compulsions.
Compulsions. Yeah. Escapism.
Yes.
Escaping reality and responsibility in your own life.
Yeah.
Top of the list. Second would be food.
Mm. Yeah, but
opiates are way down. They're way down the list when you look at American culture.
But Bob's always championing or chanting the fact that he does these 20-somethings and they can't find meaning. They can't find purpose anywhere.
I have a lot of college-age students, same thing. They're dropping out of school. They're getting kicked out because they're spending too much time disconnected, not going to class, not showing up anymore. And they really have lost their way. So I see it too.
I would imagine these treatment centers that charge all that money for what is a month of treatment, $30,000 for a month?
Mm-hmm.
Those are really psychiatric hospitals, aren't they?
There's some. There's the one that's in Pennsylvania that's a hospital.
Yeah.
That's actually a detox for internet addiction.
Well, I talked to them once. They're actually treating psychiatric illness. That's what they see themselves as.
Okay.
This is a symptom. They're dealing with the depressed, autistic spectrum kinds of kids. It seemed to be what they were dealing with.
Got it.
Or thought disorder and that kind of stuff.
Think about how strange our culture is.
And so, just one second. So for a month of psychiatric care, that's not way out if it's really a full service hospital.
So the folks up in Washington State have one that's really just in the woods, go out and hike, go spend time. But again, it's once you leave, you go back and you have to still figure out how to balance. So
that's what people used to do. That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm telling you, Werner Herzog goes nuts on this. He used to walk. He used to walk all over Europe. He walked the Alps. And he would just talk about how
he used to ride bikes and do things, and now kids don't do that. Elvis got a bike out in front of the house. I said, "Do you want to ride your bike?" He's like, "No." I think he's been on it like 10 times in his life.
So, you know,
because you have to wear a helmet for one thing.
What about, uncool.
Yeah, I don't want to see your son with a head bashing. They get used to it, trust me.
I know. It just looks weird.
My kids won't ice skate without their helmet on.
Ooh.
Right. So they do look weird because they've got their bike helmets on as they're ice skating.
But you know what I'm saying? I think that when I lived in Joshua cool Tree for a while.
Helmet.
And
get them an ice hockey helmet.
I know, they do.
Sake.
They do.
I was getting out. Like after we did the TV show or about the last two seasons of the TV show, I could make enough money just working part time and doing the TV show to live in Joshua Tree, disconnected, no internet, no cell phone reception.
Nice.
People treat you like there's something wrong with you if they don't hear from you for 2 or 3 days. If we don't hear from people back immediately from a text or an email or a phone call in 2 or 3 minutes or an hour, there's either they hate us or what the fuck, or they don't want to talk to us anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
Sometimes I wouldn't even get it, and then I'd come down the hill into Yucca Valley and all these, and then you could read the text like, "Hey, dude, what's happening? Do you want to go see blah, blah, blah?" And I hadn't gotten back to the person. Then it's like 2 hours later, "Where are you, dude?" Two hours later, "Listen, fuck you."
Right. You can see their meltdown as it happens.
That's our society. Yeah.
So Lisa was an attorney before. She's like a recovered attorney.
Yes.
Yeah,
before she became a psychologist. She became a psychologist, why?
Well, I went to a JD PhD program and did it at the same time. So to be fair, I was both, and I hadn't done my hours, my clinical residency hours. And I left law when I lost my stepdad. And so it was one of those moments where I was like, this is not making me happy. I don't fight.
What kind of law were you doing?
I did health law, defending doctors, working for a health insurance company was our biggest client. And then I worked on the mergers and acquisition team as an associate and just basically did intel on the people that were in the meeting. Mm. It's kind of interesting.
Like psychological intel.
Behaviorally. Yeah, you just look at them and see. And so I would give feedback on what was motivating them and things like that.
Crazy. And then that became empty?
You know, I was working 16 hours a day, didn't have kids at the time, and I could see that I could be really successful and I could be this junior partner and then I could go into the partnership. And all the women that were on that track were 40 and 45 and hadn't had kids, were having to do infertility. And I thought, God, I want a life. I want a family.
So where do you live at?
I live in Cave Creek, Arizona now, near Scottsdale.
Wow.
Yeah. Off the grid a little bit.
Off the grid.
I wasn't expecting that you lived in West Hollywood. So,
can you just tell, by the way?
No, but, by the conversation.
But she has a dramatic story about her brother.
Yeah. Is it dramatic?
Yes, it's dramatic.
Traumatic or dramatic
both.
Or both?
But I get traumatized when I hear it.
Oh, you want me to just tell you this?
What happened to him?
Well, he passed away in December. So he had...
How old?
Should I start at the end?
Start at the beginning.
So my brother and I are 18 months apart. We grew up in Northern California. My dad was a bureau chief at the Department of Justice. So very black and white, LAPD before.
Yeah.
My mom was just stay at home. No, hadn't gone to school or anything.
When you just describe it, I just hear abusive. Sorry, but that's what
with
I hear.
With my dad?
Yeah.
Oh, so my dad actually was not.
At the very least, not emotionally available.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, that would be fair. Yeah. Brother had been identified as kind of the favorite, and so
wanted him to follow in his footsteps.
Right,
type thing.
Right. And so my parents got divorced when I was 5, and that was actually pretty traumatic because I was a little kid and I walked out. I had a bad dream. I used to have night terrors, and I walked out. And they were screaming and yelling, and he was pulling her down the hallway, which I thought was by her hair. He later claimed it was her arm. And then I ran away because I was scared. And then I heard them again, and I saw her punch him in the hallway, and he fell. My dad was 6'3". My mom's like my height, maybe 5'6", or something she was. So he fell to the ground. I climbed out
was
a window
drunk?
And climbed over
drunk?
And found her. Probably both alcoholics. Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
And
shocking.
And then you went, what, on the street?
So no, so I climbed out the window and crawled, and she had gone next door to my neighbor. At the time, I was 4 and a half, and he was my neighbor. I didn't know it at the time, child psychologist. And so the next day, I had spent the night with my mom at our neighbor's house, and I wrote on a piece of paper, how do you spell divorce? And that's like where it kind of the beginning of where things kind of went bad with
for
the family. But just the family, yeah. I mean, good and bad came
out
of it.
How did the split happen? Boy to dad, girl to mom?
No, we stayed together. Dad, again, bureau chief, friends with judges, things like that. So dad got custody. In 1978 of both kids.
That's a small town. Everybody knows each other.
Yeah.
And grandma, my dad's mom, who I am so blessed, moved in with us and stayed with us for 12 years. And I do honestly feel
dad's
like
mom.
Dad's mom moved in with us.
I see.
With the dad to raise the kids.
Yeah.
Right.
But
right.
Brother didn't turn out.
Did not turn out so well.
Quite as evolved.
Correct. So he
went to prison.
Oh, wait, hold on.
He has been in prison many times. Yeah, he did go.
I've heard this story before.
Yeah. So I think I was 12 maybe the first time. So I, in the house, my maiden name was Drake, and my dad had a mirror in the kitchen that was glass with a mallard and had a, you know, it said Drake across it, and he was snorting coke on it. And I just got so upset, and I just said to him, I said, I hope your nose starts bleeding. That was the worst thing I could say.
He was 13.
14. So I was like, yeah, because he's 18 months older. So
he's already going in.
So I saw, I've never tried a drug. I mean, just to be fair, because I was afraid, I saw everything that happened with him. But yeah, like grew up with really difficult situation with that situation. My dad in total denial. Never knew it until we had a childhood friend that came over and said, you know, Bobby's probably doing drugs. He had gone to this friend who's older, a couple years older, came back from the Navy, and he walked right into my brother's room, put the first jacket he reached into and pulled out a pipe, and my dad was devastated. He just had no
meth
idea.
Meth pipe or coke?
No,
pipe
pot.
Pot.
Marijuana, yeah.
Well, that's nothing compared to what he was probably doing.
Right.
Oh,
so it unravels. So it goes bad, bad, bad.
Yes.
The usual.
Want me to prognosticate what happens?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you won't think of this one.
Give him a chance.
Now that you say something like that, then I got to think outside
okay.
the box.
We got to take a break while Bob thinks about this. We'll be right back. All right, we're back with this live podcast.
I've had time to think about it.
Lisa's got this quite alive.
It's not going to end well.
I mean, you're a survivor. I don't know if you're aware of that. Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because
I think she minimized. Oh, well, go ahead. Finish the story.
Well,
I think you call me disconnected, disassociated.
Well, when you told me about this, I was like, I fucking crashed my car.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I've heard different. I'll give you different versions of this that I've seen.
Nope. You're going to predict where this one goes.
No. I'm going to give you something.
All right.
Father kills son.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
We had that.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember that. That could have happened here.
Yeah.
I bet you.
My father did say that, so my mom
ended up... This is not to disparage your dad. It's desperate it got.
No, but my dad, my dad was married 8 times.
Ooh.
So when my mom, the whole situation when they got divorced, my dad said to me, I had pulled up outside the driveway and I was waiting for her to come home with Jerry, this guy that whoever she apparently was hooking up with at the time. And he said, had she come home, I probably would have killed him. I probably would have killed them both. And I thought, well, that would have been a very different life. Mm. But they didn't come home. So.
No, but usually what you have is black-white thinking meeting a drug-taking, oppositionally defiant machine, and sometimes that can escalate into violence.
Right.
Right, right.
So what happened to his brother?
He doesn't stop because he can't stop.
Right.
Not only just because of the biology and addiction, but because of your dad. He can't stop. I've seen this before, very close to home, where one son ends up the military admiral or the police chief, and one ends up in prison.
Mm.
Bruce Springsteen wrote a whole album about it. Right?
No, it tends to go one way or the other.
It goes one way or the other with a dad like that for a son.
Yeah.
So this, but tell me this, where did this go? So other than prison and horrible, drug addicted stuff, some other things happened.
Well, begging and robbing and stealing, I would imagine.
Was he robbing regularly or to steal from you guys? I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Motor vehicle accident.
And he gets in a wheelchair. He gets disabled.
Go ahead.
Lisa? That happened to the Leonard Skinner guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so he had, taken something. I think he had a couple beers at a bar, laid down his Harley. He had gotten a bike. He had a motorcycle, one of the, the fast ones. I don't know, street, whatever they call them, the Suzukis or whatever.
Becomes a biker.
He got in a motorcycle accident. He survived that, walked away from it, and I walked into the hospital. I had flown home from graduate school, and I said, "You can have a bike, another bike, or you can have your sister." I said, "But I won't give you both." Because I was at that point, I was in grad school already. What? Boundaries
Here's
were better in place.
Here's an interesting thing to me. Why even go to the hospital?
So this is
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we always say it's for us, but we're going on there. We got to quit our shit and go fly to them.
Well, but to be fair,
I just don't talk to people like that.
But to be fair, she Whether was learning how to set sister, limits and needed to do yeah. that.
I know it's
stuff.
Something about. Yeah. But nothing. Yeah. No. Parents do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Like they want to know this, that, or the other. I'm like, who cares? Why?
Okay, so you try to set a limit. What happens?
Yeah, so I set a limit. He didn't get another bike for another 8 years. He gets the Harley. He lays it out by himself without another car, and his back goes into a wood post, and he has a T3, T10, incomplete spinal cord injury.
So now he's... Now
Leonard Skinner put it in a song called "Oak Tree, You're in My Way."
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Bragging about it. The guy, Alan Collins, the guitar player, drove into an oak tree and was paralyzed from the waist down.
So he's paralyzed from the mid-chest down, right?
Oh, my
right.
God.
Right. Well, yeah, so half of it.
Lower
he had like
chest.
A, yeah.
Lower chest down. And now come the doctors.
Oh, yeah. Pills and methadone.
So he'd already been on pills before that. So he's got dependence issues, obviously, from that.
But he's got now unlimited supply.
Correct.
Who's going to take care of him?
I hope not you. Did you take care of him?
So, I was in grad school. Actually, I was done with grad school at that time. So my mom leaves Arizona, which is where we were living. She had a house in Arizona. She immediately flies back, rents a house, and starts to do care, and then I start doing respite care. So I fly in once a month and give her a week off. But they are completely enabling each other, stealing meds from each other. I mean, it was just
crazy.
So better move him home.
So he was. So I had put him in an apartment. So I had set it up. So I'm the person. I don't know what my role
you're
is. My
family's peacemaker. You're gonna fix everything.
Fixer.
Yeah, try to fix everything. So he was independent in a. Apartment. He had help coming in. He had all of this stuff that he needed. We got him a $15,000 stem bike so his muscles would stay strong. And
what did your husband say during all this?
God bless him. He is an amazing man.
He just was willing to support whatever you needed.
Yeah.
Needed
so again,
do.
This is pre-kid. So by the way, I got pregnant with my daughter, who's my oldest. So she's 8 now. So I was pregnant with her the day that he threw a fan at me in the apartment. I was pregnant, and that was the last time that I went back, by myself and did any of that kind of care stuff. So again, I had gotten better by that time, but he ends up when I'm depressed, I'm going to take 5 Lexapro, and when I can't sleep, I'm going to take 10 Ambien. So he blows out his own kidneys by not cathing.
He has to self-catheterize. Yeah. He gets renal stasis and gets renal failure.
Yeah. So,
and now he's on dialysis.
Victim. Well, let's do Blum's thing now. Victim, victim, victim.
No, I know.
Stop.
Yeah. Using.
Yeah. Using. Victim, victim,
manipulating,
victim.
Manipulating.
Yeah. Vicious.
So I'm sure when he got the kidney infections, he would complain what a victim he is. No?
Just, I always try to look at the optimism and things, but I have to believe that the head trauma that he must have sustained, he was unconscious in a coma for over 30 days. Mm. They were going to take out a segment of his skull to relieve pressure, but sure. That, the piercing of that frontal lobe, like he was always very intolerable, and we had, I think I've shared with you some of the stuff when we were younger, but
do you want to talk about that? Because that's relevant to where this goes. So
I'm trying to think, how old was I? Probably 9. Yeah, probably 9 years old. Start sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd start coming in and at night and then threatening. you know, I'm going to hurt grandma. I'm going to. So she was the only person that I had at that time.
My breath gets taken away when she tells the story.
Yeah.
You end up taking care of him.
So I end up, in the end, my dad disowns him. And after he's paralyzed, while he's in the hospital paralyzed, my dad says in a group meeting, which my mom was in at that time, he says, I think we should just let him die. And I thought, wow. You know, I mean, that's just, you know, as a kid, and I just, wow. But then, you know, he doesn't die and he makes it through. He's paralyzed. My dad is involved in that. My brother calls him a thief and a liar when my dad's trying to, you know, spend down some of his assets because of the, you know,
the need for Medicare
and all that stuff in the Medicare.
Yeah.
And then my dad just says, I'm done, and walks away. And so that left my mom and I at the time to take, you know, to manage
crazily it. Not an unhealthy move.
I agree.
My dad?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was having AFib. He was, I mean, I
mean, you got to protect yourself at a certain point.
I'm not saying, here's the thing where the string is attached, let him die. I'm just not going to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
From the very first accident, I'm not going to the hospital.
So take us to the last chapter.
So, and you're thought of to be callous and you don't care about your family.
You're not codependent enough. You can't even tell Lisa that. I'm a codependent man. You can't, it's like you reminding me about how addicts just want to use. It's not even on the table what you're describing. So where does give us the final chapter? It ends up.
So final chapter, dialysis. Then he has testicular cancer. Chemo nearly kills him. He's we've given last rites 5 times. The last time he was on a ventilator, he was doing selfies and texting me that the nurses were like irritating him. I was like, he's cognitive. Like, why does he have a ventilator? But his body was so sick in the end.
Yeah.
Liver failure because he couldn't get off the pain.
Recurrent sepsis.
He had 5 times he was sepsis. Yeah, septic. And so then they said the pain pills are causing your liver to fail. So he really tries to go off of them, but can't in the end.
That's too late.
And then ultimately at the end, I said, what do you want to do? And he said, I'm ready for hospice. And so we planned a big party, and we invited most of our friends are from like when we were 6 and 7. Everybody shows up that he wants there. He wants my dad there. I invite him. My dad says, day late, dollar short. I'm not going. I was really sad.
He should have gone. Your dad made a mistake.
Ooh, there you finally, something got through to you on that.
Yeah.
That hurt you.
Oh, I was devastated.
Yeah.
And my father even said to me, he said, look, he's like, are you crying? And I was like, well, yeah, it's pretty upsetting. This is the one thing that he wants. And he said, look, if you want me there, I'll be there for you. And I thought, I don't really need you. Like, I've got my husband, I've got my friends, yeah. I've got, you know. So that was rough. And I felt bad for my brother. And we got to talk about it right before he died. And I wrote this thing to him. And we processed a lot of stuff, so...
She told me that story, and she tells it even now with a little bit of a smile on her face. And it was that I could hear that in the voice when she was talking with her. I'm like, are you taking care of yourself?
So now
are you okay?
I know there's like a disconnect from it happening
early
to you
on.
In the tide of the feeling.
Early on.
But here's my thing is because I was raised by wolves, and most of them are dead, and you know, the sex, and the, oh my God. So what I had to do when I got sober, which was.
What are you referring to? This is a new piece there. What is that?
Just well, when she said my mom's been married 5 times.
Yeah, was there sexual abuse?
Sexually abused as a kid.
I don't think I knew that. Where
I was a neighborhood kid.
Yeah,
it was a status quo.
Another kid.
But
I remember didn't you have a story of looking over the fence at the swingers and stuff?
No. That's when I was like 11
teenage,
or 12,
okay.
13. But what happened in my life was I felt like you're supposed to build a life, have your friends, your life. And then your family is just this wonderful place you get to go for Christmas or support or
does
whatever.
That
well, that's
for your kids.
I think that's what most people do.
Okay, stop.
You know
there
what
for
I mean?
Sec. Stop. We got to take a quick break. Be right back.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. It's this life, and Lisa has quite a life. Quite a this life. And you're having trouble realizing why it's so breathtaking because you were in it and you were in it for so long.
Right. I just think that when you're in it, you do what's right. You know, my mom got really sick because you know she was caring him, and so I cared for her.
If you hadn't been if you hadn't become a psychologist and really paid careful attention, I don't understand how you could have survived this without becoming mentally ill. I mean, it's just no way, right?
Yeah, we suck you in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
or yeah. hurt or harmed or something.
See, I'm more interested in so I think it's more amazing that she was a lawyer and switched and became a psychologist than any of this stuff.
Right? Yeah, because you've survived all this stuff too.
Because that's about so. Her. That's interesting to me. This is about your brother, really, and mm-hmm. your dysfunctional family, and how do we navigate those waters? And you didn't navigate them so well in the beginning, but then you learned, right?
Well,
right.
But having to be the caretaker for the perpetrator troubled me.
Yeah, that's frightening.
That has got to stir you on a level that
were you trying to be good in your mind? Were you trying to be good, just the most amazing, tolerant, loving human being on earth?
Nobody else would step up. To be honest,
well, that was his fault.
I mean, because he wasn't a great person. He was super charismatic, and he was outgoing. He was handsome.
They always are.
But when when shit hit the fan, nobody was there, and so. You know, the family would come, but they would come for a day or something like that. And it was, you know, I did draw the line at the rehab for the spinal cord injury. They got to bowel care. And I said, look, that's where I'm not going to learn that. I'll learn how to put him in and out of a car. I'll learn how to break down the wheelchair, but I'm not going to do that. So, but nobody else really did it. So my
there
mom was there.
Medicare for
older.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Well, once he got his assets drawn down,
yeah.
But he wouldn't sit still for that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You don't qualify for that for 18 months.
After?
Even when you're in poverty and it's clearly that it's not going to be a temporary disability.
Well, they must be going somewhere. Where are they then?
The
county
the
OC?
Net. Correct. The catchment net.
Yep.
It just gets pieced together various ways. Did you ever think about being a social worker?
No.
Because a lot of this stuff is social worker
she's
stuff.
Social. Yeah. She worked her family.
You're too interested in the real, more the deeper
right.
stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Well, the deeper stuff is the sexual abuse and the black white thinking. Your dad's a trauma survivor.
No doubt.
So
how did you deal with the trauma? Your therapy?
So I think I did do some therapy.
Some therapy.
But not a lot. I think my grandmother saved me. Honestly, at 13, my dad made a really ignorant comment to me. I was walking my dog, and actually I was 12 because I wasn't even a teenager yet, but I was walking my dog with Mark Buffalo. Can I say names?
Yeah.
And he was a wrestler in the school or whatever, and I hadn't gone to high school yet. He was ahead of me. He was black, and when I used to walk my dog, we had this, you know, the same path. And I said, I walked in one day, and my dad was outside, and he said hi, and he was fine with it. And then I walked inside, and he said, "It's fine that you walk your dog with that kid, but you're never gonna date him." And I was so upset, and I went into my grandmother's room, and I started crying. And I didn't even at that time. I obviously like a lot had been going on with my brother, and I zero interest in like boys in that manner. And I told my grandmother, I asked her if I could divorce my parents. I said, cause he's a racist. And so she drove me to the library and I looked up emancipation. She didn't help me. She said, you can talk to the librarian. And I figured it out and I drew up the papers. And then my dad very quickly sent me back to my mom. So.
Wow. Yeah. That's more traumatizing than any that we've heard so far.
And I had to beg him to come back with his last wife. God, I hope I can't. I'm not going to give him the link to this website.
Your dad's still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Months. This is terrible. His dad can't yeah. listen to this.
Yeah.
I'm out of body just hearing this whole
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. So That's the harshest thing right there.
The 12, yeah. 13, getting yeah. thrown away for standing up for yourself.
No, I would argue that she might have turned it around right there because that was really coming to her own aid. And having an adult be there for her, attuning the grandma.
Mm-hmm. But what happens?
She became a lawyer. You know what I mean?
But what happens in her
to be
family.
A child? So the JD PhD in fairness was to be a child advocate.
See,
but they pay about $7 an hour.
No.
Yeah. but that's where
it started. Is boom right there. I mean, I can advocate on mm-hmm. some and maybe in a weird way, I feel like maybe that advocacy stuff. And you mentioned it's the grandmother that
Let's
really
dig a little deeper.
Hold on. Let me give her some strokes here. Which is that advocacy thing may have been what you survived with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's sort of the giving back and the coming to your own aid and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So all the nonprofit work that I've done and everything that I, you know, all of those things that I've set up.
I just don't understand how you smile your way through that stuff, though.
I don't know if that's protective. It's because you know, if I fall apart, I fall apart. So I have to be really careful about that.
Is your life really, really, really good? Like amazing?
Now it's really good. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, I married my first boyfriend. His family's very stable, Catholic parents, and I have had him. Yeah.
Gosh. You taught him, is what you said?
No, I just, so I, when we got married, I was not Catholic. My grandmother took me to a different church every 6 months. She wanted me to have an eclectic version of religion. I mean, she was an amazing woman,
this
a writer.
My
grandma.
Mom's mom? Dad's mom.
Dad's mom. Amazing woman. Yes, who raised me. Yeah. And in the end, she lived to 99. And so in the end, she would call me her daughter, which is probably more accurate.
Yeah.
Because she probably recalled that and was kind of at that point a little bit beyond herself. But I just, you know, for me, like, that's the part that I think that the resilience and all of that was probably from her and those lessons that I got from her.
Okay.
But I wanted to dig deep.
It's always another person.
Let's get into
if you don't have
dad.
Another human that you can get in frame
you
with.
You have to have that connection.
It's impossible. It's just.
What about your dad?
So I'm backing away from my horror now. Just knowing you had that.
I did.
I had my grandfather. She had her grandmother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My dad, I've considered my grandfather my father.
I need a white erase board, dry erase board.
To hang on to
No, to figure out who's who in his family.
A person only needs that person.
He's got a sister, right. Mom, a dad, grandpa, grandpa, mom.
It's all confusing.
It is confusing. It was the early 60s. But your dad is more interesting to me because if he was raised by that mom.
Isn't that interesting? I thought of that too.
What was his dad like?
Horrible. And she survived that. And that's what she gave to Lisa.
Who survived that?
Your grandma.
So my grandmother was divorced from my grandfather after 25 years. And he remarried who then was my grandma Helen, who I was born into, because that's who he was always married to. My grandfather lived in Hawaii, so I saw him maybe 3 times in my life, but pen-palled him, and my father and he had no relationship.
Okay, so why is that?
Right.
So and then that explains your family and your brother.
He was an alcoholic,
so
for sure.
A lot of addiction. So my brother and my dad's brother was asthmatic, very sick child, and got a ton of attention. So my dad was kind of sent to the farm and with his aunts and was really neglected. Mm. And then my grandfather would, give my grandmother the check, that he would make. He worked for Artie Shaw. He's a very interesting story. My grandfather.
Artie Shaw was a monster.
I know. He would.
He was an evil monster.
Oh, he was a road manager for him.
Oh.
Or something.
Artie Shaw is one of the worst human beings who ever lived.
Well, maybe that explains it.
My friend, one of my good friends, his son.
Mm. Okay.
Great.
Yeah. So that's.
On his deathbed, says to his only son, "You're not getting a fucking dime. Not a fucking dime."
Yeah.
Oh. Like, to his only kid.
Wow.
How rad is that? Like, that's all they had to talk about.
That's crazy.
So,
yeah. So that's why.
So here's the deal. I am glad Lisa.
Trauma.
Right.
Obfuscation.
Right. And I'm so
codependency,
grateful
addiction.
That Lisa is willing to share the story. Yeah. And that this, because this is about survival and how to do it. And
this
how
is about life.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it made me, how we met is I think that you should be part of the addiction conversation with technology, and I just went up to you and said, hey, this is what I need. This is who I am. So I learned that very early on, because if I didn't do it, it wasn't going to happen. And in fact, it would be hurtful. So very passionate, very strong. So if I need something, I figure out a way to do it.
Anything, Bob? She can figure it out for you.
Well, I'm interested in this technology addiction because...
Well, that's what I want to know.
When it becomes so entrenched in our society, more so technology, more entrenched in our society than even drugs themselves, and I think this society is soaked in drugs, a tsunami of drugs, right? There's 5 pills for every problem you've got. We're 5% of the world's population, take 50% of the world's drugs. Half of all drugs consumed in the world,
90% of the oral opiates,
are consumed in the United States. So, but I think we're even more addicted to technology.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's acceptable. It's an acceptable addiction that people can go into. And I'm writing on my new book is on technology, the gateway drug, the new gateway drug, because I really believe that technology is giving porn a better window. It's giving gambling a stronger hold to process friction. Yeah. So and
earlier
when I walked into,
guess how kids learn how to shoot up
online. On YouTube. Absolutely, of course. Easy. That's how they order drugs. I mean, that's how Craigslist. They get into of these things. So and don't even get me into like how they're paying for it without their parents knowing, because like Bitcoin and how easy that is to get a hold of. It's a new world that it has to shift back, because if we continue at this pace, we are going to lose an entire generation. It's my it's going to be really bad for what we're going to try to have as a support for them, because we're going to get overwhelmed very quickly.
Have you heard of the summit?
No.
This technology, these entrepreneurs and millennials get together up in Montana. I'm going to that this June.
Are they going to be problem solving around this stuff? Or
they all disconnect, and it's all about the power that Silicon Valley influences, like no other industry has ever. Oh, maybe, absolutely. Maybe Henry Ford, and then now technology.
Well, Lisa, I guarantee you we'll look into it. If it looks interesting, she'll see you there. I know, Lisa.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's exactly what you said. How do we have a successful, thriving society given what's now the genie is out of the bottle?
It can't be self-sustaining, because the problem is when you connect at that level and you get absorbed into it, they're not going to be functional beings to make money.
I live with them. They're already not.
Right. So that, you know, one of the things is when you go into an addiction center, most of them still have their technology.
Yep.
They still have access to their book, and they have technology to get access to the people that they need to get. Well,
interestingly, addiction treatment, they don't get that. Because that's often how they act it out. And they have to clean up all their technology. You might
unscrub it.
Yeah, you should look at it. Addiction treatment has been on the front of all this, because obviously porn is the big thing,
right.
The big drug, the big crack pipe right there. So they always put their technology in their what's called their inner circle. They do a circle plan, and the inner circle is like your phone, your computer, the magazines, whatever. And they have to sit with somebody and scrub it. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they'll even have to like get a lie detector test and things to really.
But that's the extreme continuum. I'm talking about most anyone we know has this escapist aversion to technology. You do it right here,
what,
Drew.
What?
We're having a conversation, and you'll check your phone. Yeah. She noticed that I have two phones. Mm-hmm. I have two phones sitting right here,
and I have no phone on me. I have tech-free Tuesdays. Like, we don't even turn tech. We go out into the yard and we play with the chickens. And I have the
tech-free Tuesdays.
Tech-free
I like
Tuesday.
That.
That's what we do.
I want to keep Lisa across the next podcast, because we got so into her story that I want her to give a chance to talk about more about the technology stuff too. Sure. Before we wrap up, what do you want people to know?
I think that they should know that there's a solution, that you can have balanced use. You don't have to do.
How do you know if you're in trouble? Given that it's not abstinence-based
preoccupation,
treatment.
You can't turn it off.
That's everybody.
That's the first thing you think of when you wake up. You know,
that's
it's
everybody.
Next to your bed at night.
That's
some
everybody.
Of those things. Right.
That's everybody I know.
Okay, so everyone's fucked.
I keep mine in the bathroom now. I keep it across the room, but it's
what
still
I'm
goes
saying
off
is,
yeah,
seven
is that why you do that? Is that why you keep it in there?
Yeah, I don't want it right in my face. I want to be able to sleep.
Oh. Thank you.
I mean, that's the only time that I don't have it next to me is when I sleep. So I get a bunch of pages, and then jump out of bed and go, okay.
No.
Well, I don't
have that bed every time.
That's a perfect example, because I always say to people, before you put your feet on the ground, you need to do a deep breath. You need to be grateful for your day. You start out that, and then you can get up and then start your day. And if you need to go to your emails,
but
you do that.
But I want to do that, but I have so many obligations via those two things. People's life depend on me answering those two things. So
you can still get up and give a gratitude prayer. Or
yeah, no, but what I'm saying is that I think that how did people get a hold of each other before? I can't even remember a time when these didn't exist. And I'm pointing out myself.
Telephones
and
pagers.
Remember Talk About? Yeah, it reminds me of the automobile. Like, how did people get how did that work before the automobile? How'd we do it? It's very similar kind of thing. I remember when I was a kid, I go, I wonder what it was like, or before movies, or before, you know what I mean? Before telephones. Each is a technological jump. This one just happens to play in our brain in a very intense way.
And we accept it. We accept that we have to be connected at all times. instead of like rotating it off? Why can't somebody else? I get that you've got people under you, but why can't somebody else be in charge on Sunday or Saturday because you have Elvis for the weekend?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's an important time. Like, somebody else should be able to be your junior Bob, like, so that you get some time
it's
off.
It's really hard. Some of these disciplines, cases. Well, some of these clinical settings are so clinician dependent, mm-hmm. that they want you, they want only you, they want you all the time. And I understand how you get sucked into that. I used to practice medicine that way. And once you're in, you're in. You know, it's just, you can't then set a boundary because they become enraged, they become libelous. I mean, they want to sue. It's really very dicey territory.
That
and by the way, things do go wrong and you feel terrible.
Right.
You really want to stay on top of it.
Well, I will tell you, when my 8-year-old said to me, I said, hold on just a second, and I was on the phone, and she said, is that text message more important than me, Mom? That was my moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was an example to me. I knew.
It's not neither. It's not black and white. You're manipulating.
I've said that to Susan.
She's super smart. My teen years.
I've said that to Susan a couple times. She went, this is more important. She said,
this is more important. Sorry.
Why do you even ask? You should know that's more important.
The universe now.
But no, I'm really interested in how the whole thing plays out.
And I really do think, like, having come from a family with extreme addiction, I'm very conscious about that. And I talk to my kids about it. And I say, this is what our family is. This is what the issues are. And this is why we create boundaries. So if you start out ahead of time, I think, and that's why I go into a lot of elementary schools, because I think by the time you get to high school or junior high, it's way too late.
We were talking about bullying. We were talking about addiction. We were talking about behavioral issues in high schools. And she goes, well, it's too late. And I go, yeah, it's age 8 is really the cutoff, isn't it? Maybe 10?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, we had a 9 and 10-year-olds at our school, in our elementary school, that were doing Instagram photos of cutting themselves, and they got 5 kids to follow them. They're 9.
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrifying.
Cutting is huge, Drew. It's back with a vengeance in the inner city.
Everywhere.
I'm more concerned about the porn and the sexualization at an early age. And, you know, young kids can get their hands on it very easily. So.
Yeah, when you and I often talk about the male female stuff,
right?
You know what it's done for women is just—it's terrible. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think that the men have an opinion of what women look like, how they act from these porn videos that they're watching, and then that doesn't even take into consideration the 3D stuff that's coming.
Oh, the virtual reality is coming. These people, they can't get off it.
They have a roller coaster of it.
No,
it
I actually, know they, but
wait,
the porn.
Didn't you want your son to get into that business?
Not in the porn virtual reality. the porn
make more money.
Yeah, probably. But the porn virtual reality, they come out and they think they've had an experience with a human.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
All this
a lot of their human experiences feel like a 3D video.
Yeah, oh, the haptic. There's haptic technologies that actually are like things that actually
they're not having relationships.
No,
I live with these people.
They are not having relationships, and they don't know how to connect to have the relationships. And so when the women show up, so the women show up and they're wearing cute outfits and cute dresses. The guys look at them and they say, "Oh, that looks like somebody who is in my porn
video."
I'll tell you what.
I'm going to
treat her the same way. So that's the problem.
She's a cool chick.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
She's cool.
And they have no understanding. So say somebody's 22 right now. They've grown up with all technology, right? When did it start being so heavy?
6 Because
I was on drugs, so I didn't really pay attention.
No, really got 6, maybe 8, 10 years ago? Really
10,
got bad.
Yeah, about 10, 15 years. Yeah, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, but like our really kids true. Were well educated, and they were like too busy, and they were in sports and stuff like that. I mean,
sports is
our only hope. Elvis plays baseball,
but
and
listen.
I think that's the only 3 hours that he's away from some sort of created nonsense.
But Susan, I think we just missed it. We just missed being a real joke because they used to go on E-Bomb's World and MySpace, and we were having to police all that. Remember? And if had it been really evocative,
but I think you and I were more addicted to it than they were.
MySpace.
Remember, Pauline made fun of you. She says, "Dad's like a little girl texting all the time." When they were doing PR for the HLN show.
What? And
she made fun of you because you were always on your cell phone texting.
But you never found out because she was doing it virtually.
I think at school they were teaching them. They were trying to educate them and say, "Listen,
I was a latecomer to texting. I still don't like texting."
No, but we used to use talkabouts. That worked.
Yeah, no, I used to use beepers and things like that.
But no, but the thing, you could send like one sentence.
Yeah.
But you know what? I've always worked in technology. I was a travel agent. I have had a million jobs at once. I had kids going in every direction. And I got to tell you, I like the texting. Yeah, it's faster. I get more done.
And she's good at, you're good at commanding technology, though.
I live you've always in technology. Been, yeah. And you know what? You're not taking it away, because then I'll have nothing to do. I mean, I can go lay by the pool, sure, all day and drink Budweiser. Sure, what the hell? I'll just go have a good day, you know, or go jogging or whatever. But I can't do that.
I think you've triggered something, Lisa. There's a little aggression coming back here. What's that all about?
I'd like to just chill all
day. I'm just going to check my phone for a second.
Susan needs to do text-free Tuesdays.
I need a text-free Tuesday. Sometimes I'll put it down for a while.
I feel like we've criticized something sacred. We haven't even been critical. We're just sort of...
Well, you know, I kind of was I'm ordering something at IKEA right now. A Twitter account, because I was in connection with other people other than just being here and a mom and raising kids. And
we'll give the alternative point of view. Fine. Yeah, I mean, because we see all the trouble.
You know? Right. And I
but that's not social media. I understand communication. And texting certainly helps.
And I run a business. Succinct. You know, and I've been running, you know, a corporation, and then the corporate home life. And then, you know, now everything's new and we have new ideas. And it's just nice to be able to communicate so quickly. Like, I used to have to get a page, and then I'd have to run home to my computer, and then I'd have to get on the computer to book somebody's travel. You know, I'd be at the market, and I'd have, you know, and I used the telephone a lot, and my shoulders were always killing me from holding that stupid telephone.
But wait a minute. So I'm glad you're saying this, because the reality is it isn't going away.
Texting is better than talking on the phone.
I disagree. Like it. But be that as it may,
I still like to talk on the phone.
Yeah,
too.
It's not going away. It is a good thing at certain levels, but like with every good thing, it has a very deep downside. And the downsides that we all get exposed to all the time. And wouldn't we all agree that probably the worst thing is the lack of relating? The emptiness.
Well, and also
emotion.
Maybe not paying attention to your studies or your work because you're on Facebook, you know, and the belief that
you can multitask. Because I think you're right that texting is more efficient. I don't think it's interpersonally, doesn't connect people the way. Mm-hmm. And the statistics show that people generate about 6 newspapers worth of data a day.
Wow.
And they actually create 2 newspapers worth a day. That's how efficient we are. So, and our brains weren't made for that.
And but I like it because I get to read more, and I'm more connected with what's going on in the world through print. And I don't have a lot of time to sit around and read a book. Okay, I was raising triplets, and I was driving, you know, carpool, and it's just for me. It's a way for me to stimulate my brain.
But imagine you're an 18-year-old girl now, or not 20-year-old girl, and the guys are all coming at you with real specific. You know, no. This is the other thing you were saying. You said the solution is somewhere, maybe education and sports. But the other thing is, women are got to solve this problem, because women have a deeper instinct and facility with relatedness, and so they've got to stand up and go.
People that grew up without it.
But
now there's a generation that grew up saturated in it, and they can't function in interpersonal relationships.
Yes, that's what we're saying.
Right. And they don't.
So just be happy that we didn't grow up in it.
Yeah, there's no dating anymore.
We have to all be Lisa's grandmother to the generation coming up.
Yes.
Literally.
They want.
Balance is key. Definitely.
Yeah, but imagine you're a 20-year-old girl and that's all coming at you.
Yeah.
It'd be rough, right?
Yeah.
So.
God, that would have been impossible.
But they want it. The young people want to learn how to talk. Hundreds of them have told me.
Of course they do.
Like, I want to be able to talk like you do. And I was like,
it's
well,
really interesting. I mean, the 20-something
text all day.
Yeah, the 20-somethings text, and they don't do any video conferencing. And my teenagers now, this generation that's coming up, they can't be disconnected off of like Skype, FaceTime. So while they're doing their homework, they're looking at each other.
These kids used to do 3 or 4 of them at once
while
doing homework.
Yeah,
that was
we can see each other.
All right, we're going to keep Lisa. We got many more to talk to her about. We're going to do another podcast soon enough. Bob, thank you as always. This is This Life.
We can talk about sexting or something.
Be sure to click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com and at thislifepodcast.com. We need your support. It doesn't cost you a thing, but it helps keep winning the sale of this podcast so we can keep it going. What else we got? Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. Please check that out. Support those guys.
We got a huge, huge project together that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, you know, find Bob at Ask Bob Forrest on Twitter if you want to ask him anything and if you need his help, and he's always available.
And again, Lisa Strohman, Strohman at Dr. Lisa Strohman, right? Dr. Lisa Strohman is the Twitter handle. And the website is technologywellnesscenter.com, where you can find
experts and answers for the questions that you have.
There you go. See you next time.
You could have been someone else. Some should have been with someone else, somewhere else. I walk the forest, it's right here before us. Your hand and my hand led me inside. You can play me like an instrument, but you wouldn't like how I play. With someone else, somewhere else. I walk the forest, it's right here before us. Your hand and my hand led me thank you.